NTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD-HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. Before we meet today's guest, I want to share with you some recent research on Sesame Street. This research by Melissa Carney of the University of Maryland and Philip Levine of Wellesley College. Interestingly, Jim Tankersley, writing about this research in the Washington Post, indicates that, and I'm quoting from that article, "The influence is particularly strong for boys," that is the influence of Sesame Street, "particularly strong for boys, African Americans, and children who grow up in disadvantaged areas." Tankersley also indicates that the show has delivered lasting educational benefits to millions of American children, benefits as powerful as the ones children get from going to preschool. So to our listeners, I say, urge your young friends to listen to Sesame Street as often as they can so that they can get the benefits that Sesame Street has to offer. Now to our program and today's guest. One of the experiences I never had as a teacher was teaching in an international school in another country. Today's guest, Tim Tuttle, a 2004 graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, has taught in Racine Unified at Julian Thomas Elementary and Jefferson Lighthouse Elementary, as well as in two countries, Turkey and South Korea. Currently, he is teaching in South Korea and will return there in early August for the coming school year. Welcome, Tim, to Education Matters today, and thank you for taking your time to share with our listeners information about your teaching experiences in both Racine Unified and overseas in Turkey and Korea. It's good to have you aboard.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Tim is a Racine native, a graduate of Case High School, and has been teaching some 10 years in kindergarten through grade 2. By the way, if the name Tuttle is familiar, Tim has cousins and other family members who are teachers and administrators in both Kenosha and Racine Unified School Districts. So to get us started today, Tim, tell our listeners how you got into PK3 teaching in the first place, including your experiences at Jack and Dill Daycare here in Racine, as well as your three student teaching experiences in Kenosha Unified.
Sure. During college and all my time, a little bit before I went back to school, I worked at Jack and Jill Childcare, and my experience there is really valuable, just getting to know kids and getting to know myself as a teacher and learning from the teachers there. And then for my student teaching, I did kindergarten at Grant Elementary and early childhood at the Chavez Learning Station in Kenosha, and Southport Elementary I did first grade.
So you really have a good background in both Kenosha Unified and Racine Unified.
Yeah, and I spent a year substitute teaching in Kenosha Unified, too. So.
Oh, did you really?
Yep.
Oh, so you got all across the district as a result.
Back and forth, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever go, now your certification is PK3, did you ever go beyond third grade when you substituted?
A couple times, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And did you like it or not?
No, my heart's really in the early years.
That's wonderful because there just aren't that many males in early childhood education, but I'm sure that you're most welcome there.
It's been a good experience from everywhere I've been, yeah.
Wonderful. That's great. So when we visited earlier this past week, you indicated that both of the international schools where you have taught are based on Reggio Emilia, or maybe more based on IB schools and their approach to teaching and learning. Tell our listeners what that's about.
Sure. The PYP, or Primary Years Program, is an international baccalaureate program, and it's really it's a framework around your curriculum that you put your curriculum into, and it gives students experiences and opportunities, and they learn through doing. I know that all teachers try to do that, give your students experiences, and this is really a good framework that really believes in that and supports that. So I taught that in Turkey and in South Korea, and also at Jefferson as a PYP school too.
You really lucked out in terms of, you know, being in Turkey and having that kind of a background.
Right.
And then after that experience, going to Jefferson Lighthouse.
Right, yeah. I was really lucky that there was an opening at Jefferson for me, yeah.
That particular school, yeah. And the children, I'm sure, were very happy to have you there as well.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Okay. And then that provides part of your background then as far as being a teacher then these days as an early childhood teacher. Mm-hmm. So anything else you want to add about International Baccalaureate? And we talked a little bit about it being added in another school in Racine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think at Westridge they're in the process of becoming a PYP school, or maybe they are by now. I'm not sure.
But you pointed out, too, that how challenging it is for the teachers and the administrators then, how they need to work together in terms of bringing about this type of education.
Right. It's a very collaborative approach to education. You have to work with your team and your administrators and just everybody. It just the way the program works, if you don't work together, it would be insanely overwhelming, I think. Yeah.
Okay, it just wouldn't work out then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that you have this closeness of working together in Korea too? Then,
sure.
In terms of administrators and teachers to get your PYP program to work.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
At all three schools, it's just the way it is. At the school, you work together to build your curriculum, to build your units, and you use each other's strengths. And I mean, as any, like, dream situation would be, right?
Okay, I know you indicated that you prefer to teach reading maybe over math and so forth. So do you do teaching more reading because of that or not?
No, I guess I was always a decent student in math, so uh-huh. It always came easy to me. And reading, I understood. I understand if students struggle a little, so I feel like I'm a better reading teacher.
Okay, yeah. Great. So this past school year in Korea, you taught first grade, and this coming school year, you will teach kindergarten. So where is your school located? Who are your students? What are their backgrounds? Tell our listeners then about your school in Korea.
Sure. It's Chadwick International, and it's in Songdo, South Korea, and it's just about 20, 25 miles outside of Seoul. So it's almost like from here to Milwaukee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Our students come from all over the world. Mostly right now, there are a lot of Korean students, but our international population is growing every year. They are from local businesses or international businesses who their parents work and live in Korea. Some of our teachers have children at our school.
Okay.
Yeah, so... they're really from all over every different walk of life.
And the language of school is?
Is English, yeah.
Totally English, in the same way it was in Ankara, Turkey, when you were there.
Right. They have a lot of world language programs. So they teach Korean, they teach Mandarin, and other foreign languages.
So children have access then to learning other languages in addition to... English, then?
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, you indicated that you have a Samsung is located near your district or in your district?
Yeah, we have a lot of families that work, their parents work at Samsung, and so their students or their children go to our school.
Okay, and the school is, what, constantly trying to increase its enrollment? Is that it?
Yeah. It's a newer school. It's just 5 years old. So
okay.
They're really growing every year. We get new students or, more classes every year. So
okay.
As the city grows, too, the city's a newer city.
Okay.
And it's meant to attract international business. And one of the attractions to the city is our school. So
okay. And then I was thinking something else about the school, and it's gone out of my mind. What class size in your school? What sort of class size do you have?
I had no more than 20 students.
Yes.
In a class. If there's extra enrollment or something, there might be a couple, one or two more students, but they try to keep it around 20.
That's the number. That's the magic number for the school. And was that true in Ankara, too, then, when you were in Turkey?
Yeah, the same, yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty, all schools are different all over the world, and all international schools might be a little different, but
yes.
From my experience, that's pretty common.
Okay. So we talked about where the students come from, then, mm-hmm. As far as your schools are concerned. So where do teachers and administrators come from in your school in Korea? Now, obviously, there are American teachers like yourself.
Yeah, there's quite a few American teachers that are trained in the States. But really, the teachers come from all over the world, mostly English-speaking countries, but not always. There could be, we have teachers from different countries that their English skills are just as good as a native English speaker, and they're a teacher at our school as well.
And so the kids benefit then, they are enriched then by this cultural diversity that they experience.
Right, and it's not all young teachers or single teachers, it's all ages and stages of life the teachers come from, and some have families and children and husbands and wives and some teachers are, they may have retired in their district for wherever they're from, and now they want to finish their career off in an international school. We have a few teachers like that, too.
Oh, and so you find this really enriching to you, then, in terms of your background and experiences?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think, the best teams that I've worked on my career isn't that long, but
uh-huh.
Has been diverse with new teachers plus really veteran teachers,
yes.
And just to use each other's experience and knowledge in that way, it's really valuable.
Yeah, and then I think you told me earlier too that what your principal is from Canada, is that right, or somebody was from Canada?
Well, I have three administrators, and one is from the States, from California, and one's a Canadian, and the other is, she grew up in Chicago, but she's Dutch by heritage and passport. So she really doesn't have a specific nationality. I mean, she has her passport or whatever that says her nationality, but she's lived all over the world her whole life. So, yeah, and that's pretty common with teachers and administrators in the international circuit, yeah.
Okay, and then in addition then to these international schools, these private international schools, the Department of Defense then has mm-hmm. schools overseas. And you indicated to me that you had interaction with Department of Defense teachers when you were in Ankara.
Sure.
What do you know about those schools?
I worked in Ankara, Turkey for 2 years, and it's the capital city of the country, so there was a lot of embassies in the U.S. Embassy, and they had a Department of Defense school. And so we became friends with some of the teachers there at that school. And, there weren't a lot of Americans in Turkey, not like in Korea, there's many, many Americans. So the difference is a little much. But so we were just, you make friends with the expats, other foreigners, and we became friends with many of them that worked there.
Okay. And by expats, you mean foreigners then?
Right,
living
foreigners.
Abroad. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's part of the jargon then in terms of, working overseas, teaching overseas, and that sort of thing. So that's an alternative that if teachers are interested in teaching overseas, mm-hmm. Department of defense schools. I think when I taught in the suburb of Des Moines, one of the teachers there had went to the Department of Defense. And I know when I was in service in Italy, there was a Department of Defense school on the at the camp where I was.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a it's a different way. You become a teacher for the Department of Defense, and you're in the system. Sort
right.
of like if you're in Racine Unified and you work for the whole district.
And one thing about Department of Defense, you can transfer what anywhere in the world that there would be an opening in a Department of Defense school.
Sure.
So that would be an advantage to
right,
that.
Right.
Okay, let's move on. Say, so without giving specific numbers, how does teaching abroad compare with teaching in Racine Unified in terms of salary and fringe benefits and that sort of thing?
Well, the obvious is travel opportunities.
Right.
You know, you're in foreign countries or close to other foreign countries, that you just have so many opportunities to travel. And the salary's a little better, and so you can save money or travel with that extra money. You get housing. They supply me with an apartment while I'm there, and they pay for my insurance, everything.
So how about meals then? Do you cook for yourself in your apartment, or do you go to restaurants, or both? Or
both, sure, yeah. You learn to cook with the food that's there. In South Korea, we can find pretty much anything, but in Turkey sometimes it was challenging to find food that was familiar.
Oh, yes?
So you learn to cook a lot of your favorite things yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you going to take back with you when you go back now to Korea in August?
Oh, that's a great question.
but did you do the same thing in Turkey? Take some foods back that you couldn't get over there?
Yeah, well, in Turkey that was a little bit different because they didn't have the import. They didn't import things like they do in Korea. And so there's a lot of American food in Korea, but in Turkey, like, it's also a Muslim country, so there's no pork.
Okay.
So that was one thing that we all tried to get back into the country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they didn't mind your bringing it in, but they wouldn't provide it themselves.
Right. I'm not sure if we were supposed to, but no one ever really checked.
Okay. So one learns about cultural diversity and that sort of thing
in
that particular way as well. So besides being a certified teacher with a bachelor's degree, what other kinds of qualities would you say that international teachers like yourself should possess?
Well, you definitely have to be open-minded and flexible. Things are not going to be the same as you're used to.
I mean,
you can, just moving from one school to another, you already know, like, you have to be a little open to things being done differently. But when you're in a different country, it really is different, especially your daily life, not just at work. So you have to be open to that and really enjoy that, you know, just the difference of other people, other cultures, and want to be a part of that. And
what got you started on this in the first place, teaching, you know, at Julian Thomas Elementary mm-hmm. School and Racine mm-hmm. Unified School to kindergarten, and what caused you to be interested in this in the first place?
I guess just adventure, you know, something
yes.
different, something exciting. I had a friend who taught English in China and sort of inspired me to look into it, and I just did some research and found out a couple of agencies that, you know, sponsored American teachers or international teachers, and they have a whole database that of schools and teachers and match them up. Yeah.
And so from your own curiosity and contact with a friend and so forth?
Sure, yeah.
That got you started
and
it built, and
yeah.
Now that you've had, what, 3 years overseas?
Right.
3 years overseas, and you're looking forward to your fourth year
mm-hmm.
Starting now in August.
Yeah.
Your master's degree from Cardinal Stritch University is in instructional technology. Tell our listeners about your use of instructional technology in Racine Unified, and then also then in Turkey and South Korea.
Sure. I, as an early years teacher, it's almost like, teaching to become technology literate.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of things that just gets students to know how to use technology. We've done research and connections with other people with technology. Racine Unified has got a lot of resources, and I mean, you probably know Sue Gorman. She's been great inspiration for anybody who likes to use technology in the classroom, and she's moved on from Racine Unified, but she was there when I was there, and she's great. So anyway, in my school in South Korea, we're a one-to-one school.
Yes.
With each student has an iPad. So we do a lot on the iPads. They do a lot of their assessments, or they make videos. I mean, how do we use technology? We use it to connect with people and to solve problems and communicate with others, right? So we really try to get students to do that with their technology in school.
Yeah. And this is first grade that you have
year. Yeah.
And you'll have them in kindergarten, too, this coming year?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you find them to be very useful tools. Does the curriculum change as a result of these tools being available to kids for learning?
I don't know if the curriculum changes. I think their opportunity to express, like, what they've learned changes. So I don't know if it's – I think it just enhances curriculum, and I think that's the point.
So the product of learning then may be different as a result of having an iPad.
Right.
Or a computer or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, I think this is a tool that's we've just begun to see what it can do in terms of teaching and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you mentioned Sue Gorman. I've had her on the program you know, before too, and I just was so impressed with what she knows about technology and how it should be used in teaching and learning.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Are you getting the in-service education in terms of using these tools over in Korea? Mm-hmm. And did you in Turkey too?
In Turkey, less so, but in South Korea, we have a whole department that is dedicated to helping support teachers in that way. So we have people that come into our classroom and assist us or teach a lesson to our students with using technology, or if there's like an assessment that students will, you know, want to use their iPad for something, we can get the technology department, someone from there, to come and help our students make a better quality, like, video or a voiceover or something like that.
So you have access then to technology people in your building.
Yes.
That you can get at any time to help your students then turn out a better product.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a great resource. Yeah.
Well, I can imagine it. Did you have that sort of backup at Jefferson Lighthouse or Julian Thomas?
No, not in the buildings.
In the district.
In the district, yeah, we could.
But having the person in the building would be another story, though,
right,
wouldn't it?
Right, yeah, it is.
It would be the ultimate. Okay, so if someone listening today might be interested in international teaching, tell our listeners about organizations that you work through or that they could work through, such as Search Associates or the one called TIE, the International Educators. Mm-hmm.
Those are the two that I went through. I've found both my jobs in South Korea and in Turkey through Search Associates, and you just go online and build a profile, upload your resume and references, and you contact someone through the association, and they help you, and you can go to a job fair or interview over Skype or whatever. Yeah, so they can go on, it's searchassociates.com. So it's very simple. You know, you just get started, and the Thai one is thaionline.com, and it's very similar. I went through Search Associates more so because I was new to it.
Yes.
And they have someone like an agent that or associate that works directly with you, that you have their phone number and email, you can call and ask them questions about schools that you might be interested in, and they're all former international teachers.
Right.
So they have the contacts and they have knowledge of the different schools around the world.
Okay, and so they have the listing of the schools and the openings in the schools. Mm-hmm. And then what do they charge a flat fee, or is it a percentage of your salary, or how do you have to pay for this service?
To join both of them, there's a flat fee. I think it's like Search Associates was around $200 or something.
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, and they also get funding from the schools that are part of their association, so they make money that way, too.
So if they provide a school, like in the schools you've been at,
right,
with a teacher,
right,
then the school then,
yes, exactly,
gives some, yeah, money. But the cost to you is relatively reasonable.
Right, yeah.
And so on. So, okay, let's learn a little bit more. I think you went out to Boston, didn't,
mm-hmm,
you?
A
job fair?
Yeah, so I've been to a couple of job fairs now, and it's really intense. So after joining the agency, they invite you to a job fair if you'd like to go. And I went to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to a job fair there where schools from all over the world are there, and they have openings in various different teaching positions. And then there's, you know, a few hundred teachers,
yep,
also. And you just interview for days.
So you schedule interviews?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you meet the school, you meet the administrators from these schools, you mingle and meet other teachers, and you set up interviews throughout like a period of like 3 or 4 days.
Yes.
And you just interview.
And so how long are the interviews? How much time do they give each person? 30 minutes or... Yes,
I think if you're doing initial interviews, it's a shorter interview, and then if they want to see you again and you want to see them again, it might be a little bit longer, like an hour or something, and then you just interview like you would for any job,
yes,
but it's more intense and all at once.
Okay, and so like you would have your initial interview, then you'd, mm-hmm, get the call back then,
right,
and say go the next day for another more extensive one.
Yes. Yeah.
Would there be a third interview? Or
there could be. They could want you to talk to a different person that is at the school but not at the job fair. So that happened to me a couple times being early childhood. Maybe the early childhood administrator isn't at the job fair,
yes,
but, oh, they want you to talk to this person in early childhood. So then they, you know, give you their contact information and you set up something with them as well.
So are they what are they interested in your background, particularly somebody like you who has an early childhood background, mm-hmm, and it's kind of an unusual background for a male. What do they want to know from your background, your experiences working with kids and so,
yeah,
forth?
Yeah, they're interested in what you've done in the classroom and,
yes,
your philosophy on education and what, you know, what you're going to bring to the school.
Okay, and do they have to get recommendations from people,
yep,
that you've worked with before they will offer you a contract?
Sure, yeah. That's also part of just joining these agencies or whatever, that they, you know, you put your references on there, contact information for your references.
Yes.
And they, if they're interested in you, they'll contact your references, and just like here.
Do you have any sense? So they contact them, say, probably by email or phone or what?
Yeah, both.
So, go ahead.
Probably more so through email, just because being, yeah, overseas or wherever they are, yeah.
And then after that's done, then they may offer you the contract.
Right, right.
Okay. And so on. So what kinds of persons did you give? Like your principal or your co-teachers or?
Yeah, well, my mentor from Racine Unified.
Yes.
My principal, you know.
Yes.
And whoever else I've worked with.
Uh-huh.
I think actually Sue Gorman was one of my references.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because she would certainly be able to attest to your ability to use technology and your interest in using technology.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. Okay. Anything else we should talk about in terms of Search Associates or the international educators, these organizations? So people could just Google these. I did that.
Oh, did
and
you?
And I Googled both of them and got information from them and even printed off some of that information.
Yeah, you can just Google and find out more information about it. Or just go directly to their websites.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And they have different sections that you can pick up information dealing with all aspects then of overseas teaching. Were there particular countries that you were interested in going to, or were you not particularly concerned about what country?
Yeah. We all have the dream job of like this beautiful country you're going to teach in, right? But
yes.
I think that early on I learned, like when looking into this, I learned to have an open mind about that.
Yes.
It's really important because you might, you know, your idea of what a dream job might be might not be the reality. So, I mean, I guess for an example, if you really want to live and teach in Europe, you know, there's realities about Europe that you need to know about. You know, it's expensive to live there. You pay taxes that are quite high sometimes. So is that something that is still appealing to you if you're not going to save a lot of money or whatever, but you still really want to be in Europe, then go for it. But, or, you know, keep an open mind. I mean, I never thought I really wanted to be in Asia, actually, you know. I thought I would stick out like a sore thumb in Asia.
Yes.
You know, I'm 6'2" and a big guy, so like I didn't think I wanted to be there. But
yes.
I'm really happy there, and I'm glad I was open to it, and my experience there is so far really great. So I think that having an open mind as to where you're going to end up teaching is really important, and I think prioritizing your must have things like it's really important for me to work at a school that is healthy environment to work in,
yes,
or is a good school, or you know, that I'm going to be happy at. You spend most of your time at work, especially when you live abroad. That's your world for a while.
Right. Okay, we'll come back to this in a moment. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Duane Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I'm visiting with Tim Tuttle, a graduate of UW Parkside, who has taught at Julian Thomas and Jefferson Lighthouse Elementary Schools and Racine Unified, as well as in international schools in Turkey and South Korea. Now back to our program. So talking about the places that you were interested in, did you get to see pictures of the schools and their classrooms and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Before you signed on the dotted line?
All that information is available to you if that's really important to you, if you want to see what a classroom looks like at school or whatever. All of the schools are very open to sharing that sort of information with potential teachers because it's hard to go there. You know, it's hard to go and visit the school. So many at the job fairs that I've been to, they will maybe, you know, if you really are interested in a school, there might be a presentation by the school. And they have video or slideshows or whatever, and they will just talk to a whole group of potential teachers at the same time and share information like that with them.
Oh, so they do have large group sessions then where that kind of information comes out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they answer questions probably.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it more competitive then to get into, say, European schools than it is to get into, say, Turkey or Korea and so forth? Because maybe people feel more comfortable going to Europe?
I'm not sure about, like, the region being more competitive. There's certainly different schools that are more competitive to get into because they have a great reputation or a really good package, you know, a hiring package. So there's competition in that way. Yeah, I think it's more... And like we said before, like when you're an international teacher, you have a pretty open mind, so you're not always so directly at a certain area or country that you must go to, you know.
Okay, now you're going back to South Korea for your second year. What about, say, your plans for your third and a fourth year? Mm-hmm. Would you stay that long, or would you feel that because you're interested in travel that you would want to move on to someplace else?
Right. I'm really happy in my school with my school in South Korea, so I'll probably stay an extra year or two, but I'll move on eventually. I'm not sure if I'll come back to Racine Unified right away, or if I'll do another country first and then come back, or what. But I'm pretty open to possibilities, and yeah. But I'm really happy in South Korea. So I think that's the nature of international teaching too. Though there's not a lot of teachers that stay in the same school for 20 years, like or 30 or. You know, we all move around a lot, so the turnover is kind of high.
It's pretty high. It's high.
Yeah, but not because of lack of dedication or loyalty. It's just that's the nature of the business, I guess.
And the nature of the people, then, is they're interested,
yes,
then in traveling. Now, like your school in South Korea this past year, was there anybody with 10 years of experience in that school?
Well, the school in South Korea is only 5 years old.
Okay. 5 years.
But yes, there's, and my school in Ankara in Turkey was a little bit of a more established school. And there were people who had been there for over 10 years, sure. Yeah.
So people can get to a school and really like it and set and put roots down and that sort of thing.
Certainly.
And just decide they're going to stay there.
Yeah, sometimes they even fall in love and
somebody from.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that, well, thinking in terms of that, what sort of opportunities are there to meet people from those countries, Turkey and South Korea, say socially? Are there activities or organizations that promote those kinds of contacts?
There are. Yeah, definitely. Well, and plus, at our school, there's, you know, Korean natives, nationals, and in our school in Turkey, too, you work with them. You work with those people, so they become your friends as well, and you never know what social circles you're going to end up in. But there's also a lot of community program or community gatherings and things like that for other foreigners living in the country that you might be at.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so those would appeal.
Right. And also, I mean, people from whatever country you're from are there too, or, yeah.
Right. So you have all kinds of opportunities to contact different people and have different experiences.
Yeah, that's part of the joy of doing what we do.
Okay, yeah, right. So that's really wonderful. Thinking in terms of your international teaching experiences in Turkey and Korea, what one approach from those experiences would you recommend to Racine Unified? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah.
How to enrich Racine Unified?
I think one of the things that the school I'm at now that makes it a really different school is there's a lot of opportunities for students to enter into, like, a leadership role. And, I know that a lot of schools in Racine also do that, too, and they have, you know, student council and things like that. But in my school in South Korea, we have different programs, and we talked a little bit about, like, Kathy Dunkerson's role in Racine Unified with the after-school programs. We have things like that, too.
Yes.
And but we also have where students can propose an idea and run a program.
Ah.
And it really, I've had a first graders that have done it. And you see a different side of students when they are in that type of a role.
And so the school encourages then
action
on the part of students to do things and so forth rather than just reading a book and filling out answer sheets and so on.
Oh, yeah. I think that education all over has hopefully moved away from that, hasn't it?
So I guess we call it active learning?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay,
yeah.
And so on. So then thinking in terms of your teaching experiences in Racine Unified, what one approach from those experiences would you recommend to the international schools where you have taught? Or what maybe you've taken it to them already?
I'm not sure about, like, an approach to education, because we're all from all over the place. I mean, we all have perspectives. And some of us have taught in public schools in the U.S., and so many of us have brought what we know, and it's established at the school already. I think, like, one thing for me, just even personally, my experience in special ed and ESL has really been, like, valuable to me when teaching in overseas, especially ESL learners, because we have so many students from so many different countries all learning English.
Yes.
Or learning in English.
Okay, and so you have ideas then about how to help them to,
right.
To learn English.
Yeah, and also special ed. I work with our special ed teacher. We have, I mean, it's a private school, so there's less special ed need in the school than there is in public school here, but it's still a need, and it's still important to do your best with that. And the special ed teacher and I both worked in public schools in the U.S., and we work really well together, and our experience, you know, align a lot, and so that's been valuable.
Okay, so that background then that you take with you, ESL and special education, then has enriched your ability to work with the children that you're teaching overseas.
Oh, for sure.
That's really wonderful. So before we can close up our shop today, I want to talk about traveling, because that's certainly one of the attractions for international teaching. Tell us about your traveling in Turkey.
Turkey is an amazing country. It's so diverse. As is the U.S., there's something for everyone, right? And Turkey is very similar in that way. Plus, the history in Turkey is just incredible. Everywhere you go, there's ruins and a
Greek
story.
Greek ruins and Roman ruins.
Yeah. Right in your backyard. So all over the country, it's beautiful country. And the people are amazing and friendly and wonderful.
And welcoming, then.
Very much so.
Okay. So then what about you're traveling in South Korea? And I think you told me this fall you're going to be going to China.
Yeah. So I planned a trip to Shanghai. I have a friend who I've worked with this year is moving to Shanghai. So I'll visit her in China this fall.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. And just traveling in Korea is also a beautiful country. I mean, I haven't had a chance this school year to travel a whole lot in Korea yet, but that's on my list to do.
That's on your bucket list, then.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as I visited with Tim Tuttle, a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, who has taught at Julian Thomas and Jefferson Lighthouse Elementary Schools in Racine Unified, as well as in international schools in Turkey and South Korea. Thank you, Tim, for joining me today for this most informative program. We wish you well in your teaching experiences as well as your travel adventures.
Thank you.
Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
I'm Gregory Berg, and coming up on Monday's morning show here on WGTD, I'll be speaking with a young man from Kenosha named Michael Huff, who recently went to Louisville, Kentucky to represent Wisconsin in the National Skills USA Championships. In the category of prepared speech, Michael finished 10th in the nation. We'll talk with him about his experience. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation. More information at carthage.edu. Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. They believe that every detail counts and every memory matters. Piasecki Althaus is located in Kenosha on 39th Avenue, serving the community since 1931.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring fruit pies and savory pot pies from Elsie May. Reminder that the market's downtown location is closed this week as the new weekday Westosha Market on Highway 50 opens with special Saturday hours. Celebrate the grand opening from 9 to 2. Support for WGTD comes from Vero International Cuisine in Racine on 6th Avenue near Monument Square, featuring American food with an international twist in a serene setting with